I don't have to give a disclaimer to this crowd, since you know I'm recovering, which gives me an excuse for not having my thoughts together. I had this image, excuse me, the image came to me this morning of a six-cylinder engine. And because it's not that I have a lot of thoughts, I don't have any thoughts. There's just nothing. So a six-cylinder engine, so three of the cylinders are not firing at all. They're just going through the motions. One cylinder is somewhere in Michigan, or I don't know what, dealing with the COVID. And one cylinder is focused on Corning, because I'm giving a recollection there in a couple of days, and I'm supposed to have, you know, prepare something for that. Which leaves one cylinder for this feast of Joachim and Anne, which is a very beautiful feast, and I would love to ponder it with you. But let me go back to the Corning cylinder, because one of the distractions I couldn't shake today was how beautiful today's first reading would have been if it had landed on Saturday, if it would land on Saturday, because this first reading is the story of their first encounter with the manna, the bread from heaven. The Lord gave them bread from heaven. And my topic on Saturday is Eucharistic, the Eucharistic recollection. So I was thinking, I don't know why I couldn't shake this, because the mind isn't working. So it just sticks there on this idea of the manna being the bread from heaven and good for Eucharistic recollection. Now, one of the things I will say is that the manna, which was bread from heaven, which was a gift from heaven to the people who were crying out for food, when they got it, they didn't know what it was, which is a very good description of our time right now. Here we have bread from heaven in abundance in the church at every Mass, and it's as if people are saying, what is this? For they did not know what it was. And that's the reason why the bishops have called for a Eucharistic revival, because people really don't know what the Eucharist is. They don't know what the bread from heaven is. But this is only Wednesday. It's not Saturday, so I can't go that far with it. Now, another, I think, very helpful insight from the first reading, and again, it's not connected to Joachim and Anne, and at least I can't connect it, but I think it's a good insight. The statement of the Israelites when they started to grumble against Moses and Aaron, the statement is, would that we had died at the Lord's hand in the land of Egypt, as if to say the Lord was with us when we were in Egypt. And now that we're in the desert, he's not with us. And you, Moses and Aaron, are to blame for leading us out here away from God, where we will die of famine. That's what they were really thinking. So here the Lord was with them in Egypt, and they didn't know it. They're calling out to him, where are you, where are you? And now that the Lord has very clearly and powerfully brought them up out of slavery and into the desert, their perception is that the Lord is not with them and that they don't have anything. They have less than they had before, which tells us something about human nature. See, this is what we're constantly doing. We're reinterpreting the reality according to the craving of our nature, so that we judge the Lord as having been with us at some other time, but not with us now, and he was providing for us at some other time when we were crying out to him then too, and he's not providing for us now. So it's humbling to see how we treat the Lord, and it's also humbling to see how abundantly he keeps feeding us in spite of our failure to recognize his bread from heaven. Now I do want to share or reflect a little bit on Joachim and Anne, who are not mentioned in the readings, and that That's because there are no readings at Nanjingyo Kemenen, but they are important figures. The parents of the Blessed Virgin Mary, the grandparents of Jesus. Perhaps because I spent time with relatives just in the past week, and we all kind of look alike. I mean, we all come from common ancestors, and it's funny to see people walking down the street and realize that that person is somehow related to me, and looks like someone who could be from a member of my family. So maybe because I had that experience so recently, it's worth thinking about Jesus being biologically descended from Mary, not from Joseph. So he looked like Mary somehow. He had the same genetic material as Mary. And Mary, child of Joachim and Anne, looked something like, probably like Saint Anne, her mother. Because very often daughters look like mothers. And it's very likely that Jesus had a similarity to Joachim, because that's his grandfather. It's his only biological grandfather. And so you could have imagined someone looking at Jesus and saying, hey, it looks like his grandfather. I mean, that's the kind of thing people say. And it's beautiful. So this is how deeply God has entered into the human family. Jesus has grandparents. A little aside about grandparents and the elderly. The World Day of Grandparents and the Elderly was Sunday, at least in the Universal Church, when we were preparing the Anuwen Way, as we're always doing, we learned that in the United States it was not going to be honored. Did you have grandparents and elderly this Sunday? You didn't have it? Huh? You didn't?
It wasn't mentioned.
But it's on the bulletin or something? Or?
It wasn't mentioned at Mass, but it was noted in the bulletin.
Okay, because what we learned was, the Pope just called this. So, I mean, people are just getting used to it. It's only, he called it in 2021, so that's only 2 years. And it's a beautiful initiative of Pope Francis, and it shows his appreciation for family relationships and especially grandparents. He's often spoken about grandparents. Saint John Paul did the same. He often spoke about grandparents and recognized that treasure in the family and in culture. But we learned that this Universal Day of, or World Day of Grandparents and the Elderly was supposed to be, was in the church last Sunday, but in the United States it was not, because there's a Grandparents Day in September in the United States. And so the U.S. Bishop said, well, great, we already have Grandparents Day, so no sense having another one in July. Let's just celebrate the Grandparents' Day of the Church at the same time that the world is celebrating Grandparents' Day, which makes sense. I mean, that's a reasonable pastoral adjustment. So I didn't expect there to be anything. But then, and on Sunday, in fact, I was in isolation and I wasn't allowed to go to Mass anyway. So I was sitting at home and my sister came home with the parish bulletin, and there is a big thing, grandparents and the elderly, right, in the parish bulletin. So I said, oh, well, maybe there will be two in the United States. In English, grandparents and the elderly, that means two different things. It has a slightly different nuance. I don't know how it sounds in Italian or in other languages, but if you, grandparents, that like a very positive title, and elderly, it has a kind of negative connotation to it. So if you approach someone and say, oh, you're a grandparent, they'll say, oh, yes, my fourth grandchild was just born last month. And if you say, oh, you're elderly, they say, no, I'm only 73. You know, they'll react like that's a bad thing. Okay, so here's Joachim and Anne. Let's reflect on them just a moment. We only know from tradition that they were elderly in the negative sense. They were older and had no children. That's at least the tradition, which in those times was considered a curse and did not have any children. Then they had a child, and it was a girl, which is, in those times, in that culture, a disadvantage, because the girl is going to be given in marriage to somebody, and there won't be anybody around to take care of you. It's better to have a boy, because a boy at least will provide for his parents. A girl will care for her parents until she's gone, but a boy will provide for his parents till he's gone. Okay. The Lord provided that they would have a child, and that's the Blessed Virgin Mary. That makes them the parents of the Immaculate Conception. It makes Anne the holy ground from which comes the perfect humanity of Mary. So good ground is part of today's gospel, the rich soil. So Anne is rich soil, very good soil. Not that she can claim any capacity for producing immaculate conceptions whenever she wants to. She's just is the one chosen. The Blessed Virgin Mary has only one child. Happens to be the second person of the Holy Trinity made flesh. But I mention this, these small families, because in this parable of the sower, there are different kinds of soil that don't produce any fruit. The good soil produces fruit 60 or 30 fold. So rich soil produces a variety of fruits which are hard for us to determine. It seems to us 100 is the best. But it's the same soil and it's the same seed. So why the same soil and the same seed sometimes produce 100, sometimes 60, sometimes 30? Well, who knows? Climate issues. But also, because we don't know what God is doing and we can't evaluate the richness of the fruit from a human perspective. I'm saying it this way because Joachim and Anne, they only had one child. They didn't have 100 or 60 or 30. They had one, and she was a girl. So they were a poor couple in a remote place, Nazareth, and they had a girl, and she's a poor girl. Great. Lots of fruit. You could imagine anybody saying, well, at least they had one, but not being particularly impressed with the fruitfulness of the soil. See how human perspective is so limited to the point of being almost completely wrong. I mean, people would rejoice that she had a child, but they wouldn't necessarily think it was, you know, that she was a blessed woman or she was a saint. And then Mary, of course, well, remember, I like thinking of this, you know, Joachim and Anne. In fact, the Holy House of Loreto, you know, the Holy House of Loreto, which is where tradition says that's where Mary grew up. So that means that's Joachim and Anne's house. That Holy House of Loreto is where, or the Holy House is where Mary was conceived, the Immaculate Conception was conceived and born, and then where Mary was when she was betrothed to Joseph. We remember the betrothal meant she belonged to Joseph already. She was his wife, but she was not living in his house yet. And that's when she received the Annunciation. So she's still under the guardianship of Joachim and Anne when she becomes the Mother of God in their house. So this Joachim and Anne have been entrusted with just the best and greatest fruit of all. So don't judge them on human terms, judge them according to divine perspective. They are worthy of not 100, 60, or 30, but an infinite fruit, infinitely valuable fruit. Okay, so even Mary, who only had one child, and he died, you know, before he lived into old age, so you can see, there's it's a dead end to just to just think of things only according to what we can measure, see, and evaluate on human terms. Well, the parable says, whoever has ears ought to hear. Whoever's ears ought to hear. We have ears because the Lord has given us this grace. Joachim and Anne had spiritual ears, and they whatever they understood of God's will unfolding in their life, we don't know. But even if they didn't understand it, they gave themselves 100% to it and were therefore very, very rich soil and produced very, very good fruit.